I'm Maya. My name is Maya Dunitz. I'm a musician. I play piano and I compose and I build all sorts of things that make sound and create frequencies.
This is Clandestino Podcast, episode 19. And today we'll talk to Maya Dunitz, a pianist and composer from Israel, known for her diverse projects within everything from jazz to classical music and sound art. She'll tell us about her work documenting and performing the music of the Ethiopian composer, pianist, and nun, Emahoy Tsegwe Mariam Gebru. Emahoy was born in Addis Ababa in 1923, and as a child she discovered the music of Beethoven and decided to become a composer. However, when the Ethiopian Emperor Haile Selassie personally put an end to her plans of continuing her music studies in England, Emahoy withdrew from the world to live in a convent. She continued to write music without having much of an audience, really. And perhaps her work would have remained in obscurity had her old recordings not been re-released by the record label Buddha Music in 2006. And some years after that, our guest on this episode, Maya Dunitz, had fallen in love with the music and decided to find its all but forgotten composer. Emahoy Tsegwe Mariam Gebru passed away in the spring of 2023, 99 years old, after this interview was made.
Okay, basically your work seems to be diverse, like it's in many different formats, but is there such a thing as a red thread going through all of them?
I believe there is. Well, first of all, there is me in there, always, and very much me, because I think, there's no escape from that, right? For better and for worse. And there is a very active or vibrating element in there, in this ritual that I perform, no matter which kind of ritual it is on that day. But it's definitely always involving everyone in the room is a part of it. So all the listeners, the audience, you know, all of us, we are in it together, kind of. So that's something that always happens, no matter what kind of music I'm creating in that moment, or if it's a sound installation or it's a piano concert. There is, I think, a presence. There's something that has to do with the moment, with the conception of time, and also the intensity and the vibrations that are flowing between me and the people around, and what the sound can create in terms of, and which is also very diverse. I mean, music can serve so many different purposes, don't you think? I mean, it can bring you up or down. It can calm you. It can give you energy, and it can make you sad or happy. And of course, beyond all of that, there's all sorts of practical uses of this magic. And there are different ways of approaching, but it's always about something very physical and very much about vibrations and space and connecting to your environment, and deepening the listening and enhancing and creating a kind of an active listening that hopefully, if I'm doing my job right, people go out and continue to vibrate this kind of active listening in other places that they go. And that's, for me, that's the hope of sound, right? So
let's talk about the music of Emoitsegwe Mariam Gebru.
Well said. Very hard name.
It's a very hard name.
It's hard to say, yes.
Tell me about your first encounter with her music and what it did to you. What was it that spoke to you?
Well, my partner at the time, Ivan, brought the album to our home, and I when I played it, I was just enchanted by the sound. First of all, the structures of these compositions are just something I never heard before, because it has kind of a sonata form, for example, or a waltz, but the accent or the smell is something else, right? It's very, very different from any sonata I've ever heard before. And her conception of time in the inside, it was so unique. I've never heard anybody interpret time that way. And also her sound as a pianist. I mean, her actual, skill as a pianist was just beyond anything I've heard. It's like she has these little ears in her fingertips. Like every fingertip would have a little ear in there while she's playing. She hears what she, you know. I was just taken away. I never heard anything like it. And yes, it was kind of a fusion, you would say, of the classical and the African, but it's not a fusion. It's just the real thing, right? It's not like you take two things and you glue them together. No, it just grew organically from this amazing heart of hers. And I never heard anything like it. I thought it was amazing. So that was my first listen to her music, for sure. And then I read the liner notes that Francis, who is the researcher that made all this the whole series of Ethiopics, the CDs, he did a really great work writing everyone's life stories. So in her CD number 21 in the series, he gives this incredible story of her life, and the last detail that he gives is that she'd moved to live in a monastery in Jerusalem. And then we said, oh, let's go and find her. And Israel is small, so you make 2-3 phone calls, you find someone who knows somebody, And then we found this friend, Nadav Haber, who is a Jewish white saxophone player, but that became kind of Ethiopian in a way. And he knew her, and he played with her several times. And he said, yeah, just go and see her. She's in this room playing from 9 to 1 every day. That's how we met.
So you went there, knocked on the door and said, hello.
Yes, well, that's what we did. We knocked on the door, we said hello, and she wasn't sure if she should let us in or not, but we kind of somehow managed to sit with her. And in the beginning, she claimed not to be able to speak any language and not to understand. But after a few minutes, the trust started to build, and we started to talk in German, French, English, kind of a mishmash of all these European languages that she speaks. And basically we talked music. That's what happened. We sat down and started to read what she was working on at the time, a new composition. This is 17 years ago already.
But she was already, quite old at the time. But she had been composing all through the years.
Yes. Yeah, well, except a 10-year gap. After in her amazing life story, there is a moment where Emma Hoy became very, very sad and almost died of sorrow, and that's when she had kind of a religious epiphany, mm-hmm. and asked to receive to get the communion ceremony, and became a nun, and she was living in a monastery for 10 years and not doing any music. And after these 10 years, she slowly came back to it around the 60s, when she finally went back to playing. And since then, she's been composing. So it's kind of 60 years of compositions.
How did you get involved in working with her?
Okay, well, I told you that we went in for this first time and knocked on the door and had kind of a first interaction with Emma Hoy, and it turned into a very heartfelt conversation, very deep about music and also about her place in the monastery as a composer and how separated somehow the religious life and the music was at that point. And in the end of this very special meeting, I left her my phone number on her notebook. I just wrote, okay, call me if you need anything. And we went home. We said, oh, we have to do something with this, but you know, life. So we didn't do, and we went on with our own things. And I get a phone call about 3 years after. She calls me and says, with this voice, I think I was sure someone is making some joke or, you know, because it was so bizarre. It's like, Maya, it's Emma Hoy, come to me. I need your help. And it was just like that, you know. So I went, you know, you can't not go. And then she handed me plastic bags of Air Ethiopia, all crumpled up from the 50s, with all of her manuscripts in there, and asked me to find a way to notate this in a way that people can play it around the world, so that her music can travel, because people have been knocking on her door and asking for the music, for the notes, for decades, and she only wrote it in as like a personal memo for herself in a very obscure way, kind of very just only the note heads, kind of the pitches with no time and no indication of how to play and how to interpret. So we had to find a way to make it accessible.
You mentioned that during your concert that there was no real structure as far as time goes in the music, the time of the music. And what was her reply when you brought this up?
Yeah, when we asked her about the time, she said, well, that depends on the day. She's just so great. I mean, and it freed something, because for her, she's continuing the legacy of Beethoven and Brahms and Schubert and, you know, all these great composers that she had admired as a child. This is what she does. She, in her eyes, she's a classical composer of that legacy. And just the freedom in which she comes, she approaches this music is something that affected me, because that kind of freedom or listening to the moment has been kind of lost in the classical performances. People tend to think there is a right way of doing it, and it's only one way, right? So instead of listening to that particular day and place that they're in. So.
Exactly. It kind of brings in this element of, I guess you could call it improvisation, where you, for instance, you pay attention to the atmosphere in the room or the acoustics or whatever, and let that sort of affect how you perform the music, I suppose.
Yes, and still, of course, in her music there is a very particular, very specific notes you must play, mm-hmm. and they should be played in the right. There is a right way. I mean, of course. That said, there is still. She's very particular about how things should be played. She usually complains that people use too much pedal, and you know, there's like, she has very specific demands of a performance. I spent a lot of time with her asking her like how things should be, so that I know that I'm playing it right, and I'm proud to say she was okay with how I did it. So yeah.
Has she ever been there for one of your performances of her music?
Oh yes, and I also go to play to her in her room. She has an upright piano, and now she doesn't leave her bed much for the last decade, so I go every time I have a concert somewhere. I make sure I go to her after and I tell her how it went. So next week I will see her and play for her in her room. And also she was present for the big concert that we did in Jerusalem, honoring her music, when we published the book with the notation of 12 of her pieces. And this was a very special moment, because all of these cardinals and the you know, the priests and all these men with their fancy gold and dressings and everything were sitting there. And then thousands of people were standing in line just to shake her hand and to thank her for what she's done. And they're sitting there, and they didn't even, I don't think they were aware of how big her effect, her spiritual effect on the world is, actually. So it was a very special moment. She sat there and we had different pianists, me and other people, playing her compositions, and singers that came to sing her Amharic songs. And it was a very, very special moment.
What does she say to you about your work with this music?
I don't know how aware she is of how much this is affecting people. I come and I tell her. Yeah. I think she knows in somewhere in her heart. She has, you know, she's very sharp. She has a, she's proud of what she has created. I think, but not in a hubris kind of way, like in a very modest way, she's a nun. I mean, this is what she really is. This is the part that is important for her. To be modest and to be you know, in the prayers and in the love of God, and this is her life, you know, and she loves this life. She loves to go in and hear this. I don't know if you've ever heard the Ethiopian Catholic prayers. You know, it's a very special sound. It's something else. It's nothing like any gospel that you know, actually. It's a very specific and unique sound. And she loves this sound. She's living in that universe. So in a way, she's very proud of her music, but as another way of praying, of worshiping God. So it's not an ego thing for her. I mean, she's really making sure she stays away from that anyway. So, and I think maybe that also impacted how. She's kind of still a secret in the world, right? She's kind of hiding in this monastery all her life.
Thank you.
her music has affected so many people deeply, and there's like a big interest for it. And at the same time, you told me there's a souvenir shop in Jerusalem where you can buy sort of a secret album of her recordings. That doesn't make sense to me.
Oh, I love that. This is reality, Marcus. Can you believe that? It's so cool. Like, if you want to find more compositions of her, you have to take a ship or a plane or somehow swim over to Jerusalem and go to the souvenir shop on Ethiopia Street number 10 and buy her CD there that she self-released. I think it's great that this is still existing in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, you would think that the powers that be would somehow make sure this album was available in other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, it's... yes, there have been some reissues of things, but some of these songs, yeah, they... only appear over there. I think that's lovely. Yeah.
Maya Dunitz performing The Homeless Wanderer by Emahoy Tsegwe Mariam Gebru. And this recording was made in 2016 in Jerusalem by Manseka TV. The rest of the music in this episode was performed by Emahoy Tsegwe Mariam Gebru and is available on Buddha Music. Please do subscribe to Clandestino Podcast. And you can also find out more about Clandestino Festival and our concert series at clandestinofestival.org.